dear naked American listener, you are about to listen to the on-demand version of the Naked American Songbook. Due to copyright restrictions, we can't include complete recordings in this podcast, but you can still hear me get naked with Rachel Bloom. She's the star and co-creator of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Musical comedy.
Musical comedy.
When did these two otherwise blameless words get joined together to form the now familiar term that strikes dread in the hearts of so many, but ecstasy in the rest of us? Well, probably sometime in the late 20s or early 30s, just around the time the British operettas of the likes of Gilbert and Sullivan got transformed by their U.S. counterpoints into that distinctly American hybrid that combines songs and stories into delightful Broadway confections that produced so many of the songs we here at Naked American Headquarters refer to as the Great American Songbook. I'm Julian Fleischer, and many folks don't realize that the majority of songs they refer to as Sinatra songs are really by the likes of Cole Porter or Rodgers and Hammerstein or Jerome Kern, and were originally heard in Broadway musical comedies. One person who does know this about as well as anybody is my guest today. As the co-creator and star of TV's Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Rachel Bloom's unabashed love for musical comedy yields up on the weekly some hilarious and often unhinged songs of her own, which lovingly and often crazily pay tribute to the songsmiths of Broadway's and Hollywood's golden era. She attended NYU's Tisch School of the Arts, an actual student of musical theater. She understands these songs down to their DNA. For example, she knows that the most important song in a musical is often the opening number, the song that sets the tone, the tenor, the stage, and as such, no song is harder to write. To tip my top hat to her, I'd like to open this show with perhaps the ultimate show opener, another opening, another show, from Cole Porter's masterpiece, Kiss Me, Kate, a musical that unfurled so many tunes that would transcend the show once they came and become global hits for the likes of Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, and Frank Sinatra, that their roots in the musical theater would all but be forgotten. But not by us. Not here. Not today. Not on the Naked American Songbook. Maestro, if you please.
Another opening, another show in Philly, Boston, or Baltimore. A chance for stage folks to say hello. Another opening of another show. Another job that you hope at last will make your future forget your past. Another pain where the ulcers grow. Another opening of another show. 4 weeks you rehearse and rehearse. 3 weeks and it couldn't be worse. 1 week, will it ever be right? Then out of the hat is that big first night. The overture is about to start. You cross your fingers and hold your heart. It's curtain time and away we go. Another opening of another show.
Another opening, another show. In Philly, Boston, or Baltimore. A chance for stage folks to say hello. Another opening of another show. Another job that you hope at last will make your future forget your past. Another pain where the ulcers grow. Another opening of another show. 4 weeks you'll rehearse and rehearse. 3 weeks and it couldn't be worse. But it will never be right. Then out of the hat is that big first night. The overture is about to start. You cross your fingers and hold your heart. It's turn from time and away we go. Another opening us, another opening up, another show.
The opening number from Cole Porter's musical masterpiece, Kiss Me, Kate. That was the original Broadway cast recording. I'm Julian Fleischer. This is the Naked American Songbook. My guest today is Rachel Bloom. And perhaps I should tell you that we recorded this interview right around Passover. We cracked open some, shall we say, fermented kosher grape juice and some gluten-free matzah. Yes, that's a thing.
It tastes like Cheez-Its.
It does. There's a little bit of salt.
It actually tastes a lot like Cheez-Its.
And we got right down to talking about how her show, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, makes use of musical comedy numbers in a way that currently is unique on network television.
All of our music that people sing is original. We never do covers or anything like that.
But you do parodies or pastiches.
Yeah. But we don't do covers. They're all original songs. But yes, right. Some of them are quite parodic.
They're pastiches in that you're trying to honor the antecedent. Like when you do Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers number, it's not designed to parody the original. It's designed to respect it and honor it and also tell your own story.
Yeah, to use it as a jumping off point.
When we're together, I feel so grand. My heart goes tippity tap 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 when I hold your hand. But I know there's another guy you fancy more. So even though I'm not the one you adore, why not settle for me? Darling, just settle for me.
I spent a couple years writing for the show Robot Chicken.
The Robot Chicken?
The Robot Chicken.
I don't know Robot Chicken. Oh. Tell me about it.
It's a show on Adult Swim that's been around for 9-10 years at this point, co-created by Seth Green and this guy Matt Senreich, and it's a stop-motion animation sketch show about pop culture.
But Sebastian, this is New York City, and we're in the world-famous East River.
And so...
Now we're both just belching. Because
I know, we're both burning.
Drinking wine and eating matzo substitute.
It was so disgusting. Oh my God, I hope no like Nazis are listening to this, because they'll be like, oh, all Jews do is...
belch and drink
belch
wine.
Belch and talk about Seth Green. So...
That proves that you're Jewish, because right away, you're worried about, like, is this good for the Jews?
Yes, yes, totally. Oh my God, I want to represent us well.
Exactly. Keep going. So you were writing for another show about a chicken.
The point is, we did a lot of straight-up parodies on there, and the way that you can get away with it is parody law says you can get away with doing a straight-up parody if you are specifically parodying the material. You can't just have a sketch about Superman having sex with Strawberry Shortcake. You have to be saying something about the material, and that's how parody law works.
Up where they walk, up where it shines, up where I'm sure their team wins all the time. Up there it's stable, eating a bagel, up in New York.
Oh, one of those flying rats just shit in my mouth.
And we don't do that as much on the show. It's what you're saying. It's pastiches as a jumping off point, as opposed to specifically making fun of the Fifth Harmony song that we're using as a jumping off point.
That makes perfect sense.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
What? No, I'm not.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
That's a sexist term.
She's the crazy ex-girlfriend.
Can you guys stop singing for just a second?
She's so broken inside.
The situation's a lot more nuanced than that.
C-R-A-Z-Y.
Okay, we get it.
Crazy ex-girlfriend.
The songs are telling the story. You're not making fun of other songs. You are using these songs to tell a story.
Right, because the character, the lead character, and this then expands to everyone else, doesn't really have a sense of her inner self, and she uses different types of songs to decide, well, who am I today? Who do I want to be? Who do I want to model myself after?
I'm a good person, yes, it's true. I'm a good person, better than you. I'm a good person, can't you see? Doctors without borders don't have nothing on me.
So it's fantasy.
It is. All the songs are fantasy.
But there's also something, I guess, almost auto-therapeutic about it. Like she's talking to herself through song.
Yeah.
Coaching herself through each moment.
So twirly.
I mean, I escaped into fantasy all the time as a kid. It gives you an identity. When you don't know where you're going or what you're doing, you can say, this is the type of person I am, or this is the type of person I want to be.
It's almost like a musical disguise.
Yeah.
Or musical mask work or something.
Yes, you're totally right.
Can we get that one down, please? But I would have to say, for almost anyone even remotely interested in songs, let alone someone deeply into songs like you are, this would be a dream job.
Oh, my God. Ever since I fell in love with sketch comedy, which was in college, writing sketch comedy, and I've always loved musical theater, I've been saying for a long time, like, my dream job would be to create a musical television show, but I don't think anyone's ever going to let me do that.
And someone obviously let you do
they
that.
They did, and it was I was doing these music videos online.
Oh, look, everyone. It's my friends from the forest, the Jews. Hello, Jews. You know, I never did ask you, why do you live in the forest? Oh, I see. To hide from people trying to kill you. Well, that's very resourceful, my picky little friends. Tell me, have you ever had a dream that you thought wouldn't come true? Oh, I see. Your dream is that people won't want to kill you. Well, that's definitely a dream that won't come true. Oh, well, goodbye. Goodbye.
I was a working TV writer. This woman, Aline Brosh McKenna, saw my videos. Wildly successful screenwriter. She wrote The Devil Wears Prada, so many other amazing films. And I got an email saying, Aline Brosh McKenna wants to meet with you. And so we created the show together. Every word of the pilot was written in a room together.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's thrilling.
Yeah.
Let's turn the clock back a little bit to, couldn't have been that long ago, when you were young, and you were interested in songs. Like the first time you realized a song was important to you.
Oh, my God. I always, because I was a theater kid and an only child, I had a lot of imaginary friends. I loved imagining. I mean, I wanted to do theater from, I mean, the earliest, I was in my first play when I was like 4 and a half, I think. And so I very early on learned that I loved singing, and I just remember I would play the Beauty and the Beast soundtrack and go downstairs and say, okay, I'm about to do a show. And I'd pretend that I kind of had this long-running Beauty and the Beast show, and I would play dress-up and just act out the entire movie Beauty and the Beast.
And you brought a song from Beauty and the Beast for us to listen to. Am I correct?
Oh, my God, did I?
It's a great segue. Thank you so much.
Oh, my God.
This is a classic from Beauty and the Beast, Menken and Ashman, from their masterpiece.
Oh, my God.
Why is this song interesting to you?
Well, it's very primal.
It's an opening number.
Well, first of all, this is one of the first musical theater songs that I knew and memorized.
Right.
It's the perfect opening number. You meet everyone. It's the idea of a quirky girl being at the center of attention, which is the dream of every girl who's in musical theater, to be the quirky, different one. I'm not like them. I'm different. And everyone's like, oh, she's so beautiful but weird. Because
right.
No one wants to be like, she's weird and ugly. It's like, no, I'm beautiful, but like I like to read. It's the female gaze, if you will.
Right.
Every girl wants to be Belle, where it's like, I'm smart and pretty and people don't understand me except for this prince and his talking couches.
Right, but I'm not too pretty.
I mean, it's not like they all treat her like she's ugly. They admit she's pretty, which is good, because there are some TV shows and movies where the girl is super quirky but, like, gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, she's gorgeous, but she weird. Mm-hmm.
Do you see yourself as Beauty or the Beast?
Oh, Beauty.
There you go.
Well, every little girl does, of course.
Let's listen now to Belle from Beauty and the Beast, the original.
Yeah, oh, this is the OG. Ugh.
Paige O'Hara's film debut, and you can hear the smile in her voice.
Oh, yeah, it's in The Mask. She's singing in The Mask.
Little town, it's a quiet village. Every day, like the one before. Little town, full of little people, waking up to say,
bonjour!
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 There goes the baker with his tray like always, the same old bread and rolls to sell. Every morning just the same, since the morning that we came to this poor provincial town.
Good morning, gal.
Morning, monsieur.
Where are you off to?
The bookshop. I just finished the most wonderful story about a beanstalk and an ogre and
That's nice. Marie! The baguettes! Hurry up!
Look, there she goes, the girl is strange, no question. Dazed and distracted, can't you tell?
Cause her head's upon some cloud.
No denying she's a funny girl, that's
Belle. Bonjour.
Good day.
How is your family?
I need 6 eggs. There must be more than this provincial life.
Ah, Belle.
Good morning. I've come to return the book I borrowed.
Finished already?
Oh, I couldn't put it down. Have you got anything new?
Not since yesterday.
That's all right. I'll borrow this one.
That one? But you've read it twice.
Well, it's my favorite. Far off places, daring sword fights, magic spells, a prince in disguise.
If you like it all that much, it's yours.
But, sir...
I insist.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Look, there she goes, that girl is so peculiar. I wonder if she's feeling well.
With a dreamy, far-off look.
And her nose stuck in a book.
What a puzzle to the rest of us is Belle.
Oh, isn't this amazing? It's my favorite part.
Her name means beauty. Her looks have got no parallel.
She's nothing like the rest of us. Yes, different from the rest of us is Belle.
Wow, you didn't miss a shot, Gaston. You're the greatest hunter in the whole world.
I know.
No beast alive stands a chance against you. And no girl for that matter.
It's true, LeFou. And I've got my sight set on that one.
Well, the inventor's daughter?
She's the one. The lucky girl I'm going to marry.
But she's...
The most beautiful girl in town.
I know, but...
That makes her the best. And don't I deserve the best?
Well, of course. I mean, you do, but...
Right from the moment when I met her, saw her, I said she's gorgeous and I fell. Here in town there's only she who is beautiful as me. So I'm making plans to woo and marry Belle.
You call this bacon?
Some cheese, 1 pound.
Excuse me.
I'll get the knife.
Please let me through.
This bread, it's stale.
Madame's mistake.
There must be more than this provincial life.
Just watch, I'm going to make Belle my wife.
Belle, from the original 1992 movie, Beauty and the Beast.
You were just a tyke when that came out, so you were vulnerable to all of its charms.
That's the thing is, I mean, the things that we listen to when we're that young, and so I really escaped into fantasy with that song. And then learning later when I took a musical theater writing class, the idea of many great musicals, Fiddler on the Roof being one of them, open with the idea of an environment song.
Mm.
This is establishing
the
status quo. This is the status quo that we are about to break. And you see that in movies, too. You want to establish the status quo before you break it and before the character goes on the journey. And so, I mean, tradition, the opening number of Ragtime, this, it's these sweeping numbers that show us this is what the world is, and these are all of the patterns that we are about to spend an hour and a half to 3 hours breaking.
Damn, is like, that something... They teach you or you just figured that out?
Yeah. We studied, because I took a class through the NYU Graduate Musical Theater Writing Program, and we looked at tradition. And then the opening number, what do they call it? The opening number from a chorus line. I hope I get it, of course.
How many people does he need?
everything that's established, and you see this in film writing too, everything that's established in the song tradition is then turned on its head throughout the movie.
Right.
This is the role of the father, this is the role of the mother, this is the role of the daughters and the sons, this is what we do, and then you upend all of that. And the same thing with this, which is she's a funny girl, she's weird, she's on the outside, and she dreams of someday meeting a prince in disguise and going on an adventure, and that's exactly what's about to happen.
And as you say funny girl, I realize that that's not unlike funny girl.
Uh-huh. If a girl isn't pretty.
Right.
And then you upend that whole thing.
Right. When
yeah.
a girl's incidentals are no bigger than
two lentils.
One of my favorites.
It's such a great, that's such
Come
a great
on.
Lyric, right?
I use it every day. I was just
what?
Quoting I was just quoting Funny Girl to them earlier.
Yeah.
I was saying, would a convent take a Jewish girl?
I love that song.
Isn't this the height of nonchalance, furnishing a bed
in
restaurants?
Restaurants?
Come on, can we listen to Funny Girl right now?
Oh, yeah, let's listen to You Are Woman, I Am Man from Funny Girl.
Isn't this... Oh, so, okay, so this is Omar Sharif in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Yeah, now, is he supposed to be Jewish? Because in real life, Nikki Arnstein was Jewish.
Yes.
Okay.
But obviously, Sharif is Egyptian.
Yeah.
And he's seducing her
mm-hmm.
in a private dining club.
Yes.
And she's never seen anything like this.
Yeah. I think this song is... so sexy. Like, yeah, I would do this guy. Leave something to be desired. Mm.
And so he's trying to, like, put the moves on her and be all slick. And then she's like, oh.
I mean, and she's soaked.
Yeah.
Her panties are soaked is the subtext of this song. She's like, oh, I'm so wet.
Okay. Here is Sidney Chaplin, not to be confused with Omar Sharif, who did it in the movie, and Barbra Streisand in the original 1964 Broadway cast album of Funny Girl.
You are someone I've admired. Still, our friendship leaves something to be desired. Does it take more explanation than this? You are woman, I am man. Let's kiss.
Isn't this the height of nonchalance, furnishing a bed in restaurants? Well, a bit of dinner never hurt, but guess who is gonna be dessert? Do good girls do just what mama says when mama's not around? It's a feeling, oy vey, what a feeling.
A bit of pate.
I drink it all day. Should I do the things he'll tell me to? In this pickle, what would Nellie do? In my soul, I feel an inner lack. Just suppose he wants his dinner back.
Does it take more explanation than this?
Just some dried out toast. Chopped liver. How many girls become a sinner while waiting for a roast beef dinner? Though most girls slip in ordinary ways, I got style, I do it borderlays. Well, at least he thinks I'm special. He ordered a la carte. It's a feeling I like, feeling very. I feel the feeling down to my toes. Now I feel that there's a fire here. Try that once a little higher, dear. What a beast to ruin such a pearl. Would a convent take a Jewish girl?
Does it take more explanation than this?
Ooh, the thrills and chills going through me. If I stop him now, can he sue me?
Her voice is so great. such a good actress and such a good singer. And, you know, sometimes you have great singers who aren't great actresses. And
what is she, 18 and a half, 19?
Yeah, in real life, she'd already been married once. So she was not a virgin.
No, but just how complete she was when she arrived.
Oh, my God. I feel like there's a pornographic version of this.
Well, if anybody could do it, based on my brief perusal of your YouTube catalog, it's you.
Yeah.
When did you first hear Barbara Streisand?
My parents. I was a little kid when she was doing her big farewell tour. And so we had her whole box set.
I went to that in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Turns out it wasn't her farewell tour.
No, it was not at all.
So
it should have been.
Ooh.
To be very honest, and I say this with all respect, she's Barbara Streisand. I don't get to decide. Her taste is terrible.
Hmm.
Her personal taste is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen her passion for design?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's unbelievable. The room's full of dolls and the...
I do know her niece. Her niece is in the comedy community.
The comedy community. Is that what you guys call it?
Well, because it's the improv and sketch community.
The comedy community.
The comedy community.
Please, I've hung out with comics. You don't have any community. That's true.
No, improv and sketch is different. That's why comedy's gotten nicer and more collaborative, because it now comes more from improv and sketch than just stand-ups being like, I'm going to talk about my parents.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So that's the side that you're attracted to.
Yeah, that's where I come from.
Do you?
I used to do stand-up, but I was always coming at it from the improv sketch community, which you have to be collaborative. You can't be a complete sociopath, because the nature of it is collaboration, and collaboration towards the good of one idea.
Right. Do you do a lot of collaborating on the show?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I co-created the show with someone. She's the showrunner. And then the songwriting, there are three songwriters, and it's me, Adam Schlesinger, who also co-produces the songs, and Jack Dolgen, who also writes on the writing staff. And the songs are written in some combination of the three of us. Sometimes it's just me, sometimes it's just Adam, but there's a lot of collaboration.
It must be unbelievable to go from basically like someone who's like working in a writer's room, doing what you do, to suddenly being thrust into a position of almost complete creative control over a giant show.
It all happened so quickly, I didn't have time to really think about it until I went on a vacation this winter. That's when I could really process it.
And what did you come out with once you processed it?
This is great. I was like, this is awesome. But stuff has changed. It's actually nice being back in New York, right? It's nice being back. I feel like I'm lies at the palace. It's nice being back
in New York. It's nice being back.
Ooh, that's good.
And it's nice to have Rachel Bloom back in New York. And we will be back with more Naked American Songbook in just a moment. I'm Julian Fleischer. If you're just joining us, this is the Naked American Songbook. My guest is Rachel Bloom, comedy writer, songwriter, singer, song lover, co-creator, and star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And speaking of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, when the conversation turned to Stephen Sondheim's, some would argue, underappreciated musical Passion and the song Loving You, Rachel's passion was palpable.
Oh,
look at that face.
Oh.
You just aged like 5 years.
Did I?
Yeah. You came into your womanhood.
So Loving You
is a deep cut, by the way.
It's a deep cut, but I remember the second I heard it, I was like, this is what love is to me, which is not good. Loving You is not a healthy song. Let's just be upfront. It's not a healthy song. It's a song about obsession. But that's how I lived my love life for many, many years. And
I don't think that's uncommon for young people.
No.
We love crazily.
No, not at all. And yeah. I could go on and on about the science of love. And I sang, this was the first song I sang in college. I was a musical theater major.
And she's singing this whole thing with like a witch nose and a big...
Yeah.
That's the joke of this musical, is that she's hideous to behold.
Yeah. Fosca, you're so ugly, Fosca. It's a complete arc in like 32 bars.
Let's listen to Loving You.
It's Dee Murph, right?
Dee Murph. You refer to Donna Murphy.
It's Dee Murph.
This is Dee Murph.
This is Dee Murph, yeah.
Fosca, you have to face the truth. Please. You have to give me up.
Loving you is not a choice. It's who I am. Loving you is not a choice, and not much reason to rejoice, but it gives me purpose, gives me voice, to say to the world, this is why I live.
But loving you, I have a goal for what's left of my life. I will live and I would die for you.
And then he has sex with her and she dies. Spoiler alert. Which makes the term a little death take on a new meaning.
That was Donna Murphy in the original Broadway cast recording of Stephen Sondheim's Passion, singing Loving You, a perfect 32-bar song, according to my guest Rachel Bloom,
mm-hmm.
TV's own.
I think. Don't kill me if it's more than 32, but I believe it's a 32-bar
song. Well, we know what you mean when you say 32 bars.
It's a good audition song.
You're not
song.
Denying the Holocaust. You're just saying it's short, right?
Yeah.
All right, good.
The sweet and the bitter.
Remember that we suffered.
Streisand and Hitler.
Remember that we suffered.
Spielberg and Hitler.
Remember that we suffered.
Have we mentioned Hitler? I'm just saying that we suffered.
When I say we, you say suffer. We
suffered.
We
suffered.
I can't hear you.
Remember that we suffered. Hey!
Anyway, yeah. Well, I interrupted. Forgive me. We're back to Loving You from Passion by Stephen Sondheim.
You know, I have a very complicated relationship with listening to music and the escapism of it, because I think sometimes it would allow me to revel further in obsessions that I shouldn't be fixating on rather than deal with my own problems. And I remember I first heard Passion when I was in the middle of a pretty deep obsession in early college.
Yeah.
And yes, music allows me to indulge. Like, when I had a crush on someone, I would listen to love songs and imagine that myself and this person were dancing, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes this wouldn't be... I shouldn't be fixating on this person.
Right.
So even before
it's like
social
picking
media.
Picking at a scab or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Picking at a self-indulgent kind of masturbatory scab. And the song Loving You is how I felt. Loving you is not a choice. It's who I am. Loving you is not a choice. And not much reason to rejoice. And the idea of love being all-consuming and negative and not this beautiful ethereal thing, but this being this like, oh, I know this is bad and toxic, but it defines me. And that is something that has defined a lot of who I was when I was younger, but also something I now fight against.
Mm-hmm. No more drama.
Yeah.
I'm just a girl in love.
La, 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 lovey-dove.
I can't be held responsible for my actions.
She's an ingenue.
I have no underlying issues to address. I'm certifiably cute and adorably obsessed.
They say love makes you crazy, therefore you can't call her crazy. Cause when you call her crazy, you're just calling her in love.
Blam!
A big inspiration for the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is exploring love and obsession from an objective, almost scientific viewpoint. They've done brain scans of people in love, and it's akin to people with obsessive compulsive disorder, people mm-hmm. on cocaine. It's in your brain, it is a deep need. It's not a want. It's up there with hunger and thirst. And so,
no more hunger and thirst. But first, be a person who needs people.
Oh, there we go.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that song.
You just quoted it. You said it's a hunger, a thirst.
People is not one of the songs that I listen to a ton from Funny Girl. I don't know why.
I don't listen to it either, but you can't escape it.
Yeah, you're right. I don't automatically associate those lyrics with Funny Girl until you start singing it. It's a theoretical song. It's like people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. It's like, no, I want to hear Rain on My Parade. That's like primal, but like...
Yeah, I think you're right. And frankly, I don't know if anybody else... That song would have made it to the place it has in the firmament of songs were it not for her.
Yeah, right. It's just a very...
She just sold it with such conviction.
Yeah, it's very pensive.
Okay, Rachel Bloom and I may not be the people for the song People. We are not the people who love people. But we are people who love Barbara. And in a moment, we find out what else Rachel Bloom loves when we play a little game of this or that. And we're back. This is the Naked American Songbook. I'm your host, Julian Fleischer. And today, I'm getting naked with Rachel Bloom, creator and star of the show Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Season 3 airs this fall on the CW. And now for a little game we like to call This or That.
Gotta be this or that.
Great.
Are you ready?
Yeah, coming from the gut, I'm going to answer quickly.
All right. Leah, Delaria or Salonga?
Oh, God, Salonga.
Ooh, why?
She was on my show.
That's a good reason.
You may already know this one. I sang this on Star Search in 1984, and I got 3¾ stars.
She's just the worst.
South, Park or Pacific?
Park.
Why?
It's hilarious.
Okay, good. Mandy, Moore or Patinkin?
Patinkin.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Come on.
Okay.
Everyone loves a good Patink.
I have been in the revenge business so long. Now that it's over, I do not know what to do with the rest of my life.
I met him at a party.
You did?
Uh-huh, and I was about to smoke a cigarette, and he stopped me from smoking a cigarette. Uh-huh.
He just grabbed it. He said,
well, I'd introduced myself earlier, and he and his wife were like, no, don't ruin your talent. And then we had a long conversation about vocal health.
Really?
Yeah, I love his voice.
It's very Jewish. It's very Yiddishkeit.
It's like a cantor.
Yeah, it is. So do you still smoke?
I never smoked. I was just at a party and someone, you know, you'll have an occasional cigarette when you're drunk.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Fine. No, I never smoke. One cigarette every 8 months.
Right. When you've had a little...
Actually, this movie I just
did. You've had some off-brand Manischewitz.
Yeah.
Wait, you just plugged a movie. You just shoved a plug in there.
Well, my husband did direct and write the movie. That's why I'm in New York. But in the movie, I smoke.
That's nepotism. You know that. Doesn't count.
It's disgusting. It's horrible.
Okay, good. Let's move on. Nathan, Lane or Detroit?
Nathan Lane.
Why?
Because he's great.
Life is a game that's full of hard choices. Life is a game that's full of hard knocks. But in the end, the moral is clear. Always sing outside the box.
I've met him. He was on my first talk show appearance ever. It was when Crazy Ex-Girlfriend first came out, and he was like, the show is brilliant, and you're so brilliant at it. And I'm a massive Nathan Lane fan. Mm-hmm. So that was a big deal.
Good. Golden. Girls or Globes?
Ooh. I mean Golden Globes, because it changed my life.
Okay.
Not that Golden Girls didn't.
Golden Girls, come on.
Yeah, it's great.
Show's perfect.
But Golden Globes, you know.
Hamilton. Alexandra or Linda?
Alexander.
Okay. Donna Murphy or McKechnie? Careful.
Donna Murphy, and I'll tell you why, because of Passion, but also her rendition of Mother Knows Best in the movie Tangled touches me in many, 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 many ways.
Mother Knows Best.
Cab. Erne or Aberet? That's Cabernet or Cabaret. Sorry.
I mean, I love both, but I'm drinking kosher wine right now, so I feel like it's beshert for me to say. That's not the proper usage of beshert. For me
to
say
close.
Cabernet.
We'll take it. It's in the ballpark. Okay. Cabernet. And finally, Ray. Sugar or Bradbury?
Bradbury.
What about Sugar Ray?
Oh, Ray Sugar. I didn't realize that's what you were doing.
I did read your bio.
Oh, that is then that's a tie.
Oh.
That's a real tie. Those are some really important Rays in my life.
In the Sugar Ray situation.
I wrote a jukebox musical, a 10-minute jukebox musical, solely of the music of Sugar Ray. That is one of my favorite things I've ever written, which is quite delightful. It's basically Rent, but with all Sugar Ray music.
Take a swim in the deep blue sea. I don't believe that you reach for me.
I made this viral video called F*** Me, Ray Bradbury, which is what got me my representation and solidified me as a musical comedy songwriter.
F*** me, Ray Bradbury, the greatest songwriter in history. Oh, F*** me, Ray Bradbury.
What in God's name were you thinking?
I know exactly what I was thinking when I wrote that. It was my junior year of college. I was going through a bad breakup with a guy who was in comedy, not my husband, who was quite, let's say, emotionally unaware. And I was at home rereading The Martian Chronicles. Which
is he single?
Oh, he's not. But I'll let you know.
Thanks.
I was reading The Martian Chronicles, and I was like, oh, well, this is someone, Ray Bradbury is someone who is smart, who understands, like, high concept ideas, but also, like, is soulful and emotional. And all Ray Bradbury's writing, it's sci-fi and fantasy premises to really get into how the people or the sentient beings in them react to them. And so I was like, he's the perfect guy.
Wow, so this was an actual, like, Ray Bradbury love thing.
Yeah. You will love it. Have you ever read Ray Bradbury?
I mean, I read him as a kid. You know.
No. Now you got to read. It's a whole new meaning now.
I really will, because everybody sort of says the same thing. And I guess I assumed, and I'm ashamed of my having made this assumption, that your viral video of me, Ray Bradbury, was somehow like snarky. But in fact, it's quite a sincere love
letter. No, it was actually pretty sincere. And I think it was a reaction to pop songs always being about going to the club and having anonymous sex with the hottest guy, and that's just never been my style of anything.
God forbid. You should have anonymous sex with the hottest guy.
It's just never been, like, my thing.
We'll talk about it later.
All right, great.
And that was another edition of This or That. We're going to move on to Where or When from Babes in Arms.
Mm.
Tell me.
I just love classic musicals. I have a really... old soul's such a trite thing to say, but when it comes to my music taste, I have a very old soul, and I just... This song to me feels like what every past relationship feels like. Even when you run into someone on the street, it feels like when you were with them, even if it was a couple of months before that, you were a different person.
Yeah.
And I think the song really beautifully captures that in a very succinct, it's a very succinct song to capture quite a complex emotion.
Bing, bang, boom. Let's listen to Sinatra since he's the, you know. Really...
Ooh, yeah.
Also, a little memo from your future. You're not too distant future, but your future nonetheless. The older you get, the more poignant this sentiment becomes, because you literally can't remember where or when. You're like, was that college or high school? Was that summer camp? Or maybe it was that thing I did with the Boy Scouts. You know, like,
What did you do with the Boy Scouts?
Oh, got him into a lot of trouble, sister. Let's just say I got kicked out.
But if Frank Sinatra really ran into an ex, he would just instantly be having sex with them because he's Frank Sinatra. Is there any, like, longing and regret on Frank Sinatra's part? He's Sinatra.
Listen to this.
Okay.
Because I think this may be the platonic ideal of Frank Sinatra.
Mm.
For anybody who doubts his greatness, this is it.
It seems we stood and talked like this before.
Wow.
We looked at each other in the same way, but I can't remember where or when. The clothes you're wearing are the clothes you wore. The smile you are smiling, you were smiling then, but I can't remember where or when. Some things that happen for the first time seem to be happening again. So it seems that we have met before and laughed before and loved before, but who
Jesus.
Oh,
H
that's
Christ.
Amazing.
Isn't
wow.
that incredible?
It's amazing. Wow.
And what's remarkable, you know, about the arrangement is it's just one little out-of-tune upright piano until the very end,
yeah.
and then suddenly this orchestra comes blaring in and swooping through.
It's meant to be the climax of a movie. You just, like, it builds. I mean, it's a perfect example of a song where, like, you see that song.
Yep. Well, that's his thing. I mean, I have to say, personally, I came to Sinatra very late. Mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, perhaps predictably into female singers,
uh-huh.
you know, Ella Fitzgerald, chief among them, and then Sarah Vaughan and on, Joni and the other contemporary ones. And I just always sort of rejected him as kind of like, he reminded me of my gym teacher, just like a macho idiot.
Mm-hmm.
So later in life, you listen to tracks like that and you're like, oh my God, it's so
yeah.
raw and vulnerable. And I'm thinking about Sinatra, how he embodies so many contradictions. I think it was one of his daughters called him a winner who identified with losers.
Yeah.
But also, like, he talked in sophisticated language. You know, the lyrics of Johnny Mercer and Johnny Burke and the other Johnnies were all sort of very sophisticated, often used vocabulary mm-hmm. words that probably were not the kind of words that Sinatra grew up with in New Jersey.
Yeah.
But he pulls it off effortlessly. So he sounds very debonair, almost European. At the same time, he's kind of a bruiser. He's a lover and a loser at the same time. All these things come together in him in a way that's just, I just don't think anybody else ever pulled off. It's all in that song for me.
I agree.
Now, you chose that song, I remind
did.
You. Is there another version that you think of, or you just like the song generically?
I just love this. I just, any version of that song I love. But that's a really great point. I mean, I think that men look up to him as this idea of masculinity, but yet it makes my heart mm-hmm. swoon in the way it does when I listen to musical theater.
It's emotional.
But yet that men are like, oh, yeah, that's my bro.
Yeah. Well, they always said women want to be with him and men want to be him. Isn't
right.
that the thing about Sinatra? So if you're a lover of this song,
mm-hmm.
generically, would you call it a part of the what we refer to as the Great American Songbook?
I would.
And what do you think that book is?
God.
Are you happy with it, with the definition
when
of
I
it?
Think of the Great American Songbook, I'm thinking of Gershwin, Jerome Kern, Cole Porter, George M. Cohen, or Irving Berlin. Because that established, I don't know, American music.
So when you do a Sugar Ray musical,
uh-huh.
you're not saying, I think, I mean, because the piece made sense. I mean, you use the songs to actually tell the story.
Yeah. I guess you could say that my life philosophy is, I just want to fly.
Do you think those are great American songs?
They're American songs. As far as, like, greatness, I acknowledge that there are some songs that I love because they represent a time of my life or some sort of nostalgia that I want to revel in. I mean, when I think of the American Songbook, though, I think a lot of Sondheim should be in there. I think a lot of Kander and Ebb should be included. I think Hamilton should be included.
Sure. And that's because
stuff that really elevates the form.
Right.
And does something new.
And seems like it'll last, right?
Yeah. Stuff that you keep coming back to. I mean, I acknowledge that most Americans don't continue to listen to Assassins, but Assassins is something I come back to.
Right. And you do so without any apology, right? I mean, do you wish that other Americans were listening to Assassins? Like, when you go to the mall, do you wish Assassins were playing on the overhead speakers while you shop?
Everybody's got the right to be happy.
That's a really hard question. Yeah, it's pretty cool that people who aren't normally into musicals are into Hamilton now.
Right.
That's awesome. But it still feels, even though it's Hamilton, it still feels like a niche cult interest, even though so many people love Hamilton now.
But I actually think that Hamilton is so big that it goes past niches.
But people still say, like, oh, I'm a dork. Like, I listen to Hamilton all the time.
Right. Because everybody has to apologize for
yes.
musicals, which I think is terrible.
That is. And I think I've learned to apologize for liking musical theater. I
don't
have to acknowledge
stop
the
doing it. But, I mean, your show is unapologetically embracing of
yeah,
that,
but it's pastiches.
Right?
I mean, it's also taking the piss out of the genres that it's satirizing.
Really?
Yeah.
But it seems very affectionate to me.
It's very affectionate, but the idea of something like Settle For Me, which is our Fred and Ginger number, is also looking at Fred and Ginger numbers and saying, this is the root of the emotion, that this idealized romanticism is not real. That's not how people really are.
Maybe it's time to grow up and just settle for... All right already!
now that you say it, I think that what people conventionally think of as the Great American Songbook starts to end for most people where that kind of romantic notion starts to fall apart in popular song.
Yes.
Essentially like where Bob Dylan rises, you know, with Positively 4th Street.
Mm-hmm.
No. The reality is much uglier than that, much more difficult and problematic and often angry, that relationships are actually not at all like a Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movie.
Yeah.
They're more like a hot mess on an East Village street.
You see me on the street. You always act surprised. You say, how are you? Good luck. But you don't mean it.
I don't see the Great American Songbook, as far as a term, being the actual definitive thing of these are the songs, the Great American Songs. I think of Great American Songbook being a term for an era of music at this point. Like, I don't consider that if you say something's from the Great American Songbook, you're not saying these are the only songs that matter. These are the greatest songs in American history. And some of them are. It's an era. It's just like saying the golden age of musical theater.
But I object to it. I feel like the problem is that people define the Great American Songbook by this set of criteria that somehow cannot be transferred to another era. Like, I do believe that right around the middle of the 70s, some of the greatest songs that America ever produced came out.
Mm-hmm.
But they were by Stevie Wonder, and they were by Lou Rawls, and they were by, you know, a lot of African-American writers who were really finding their voice then. And obviously Joni Mitchell and the whole L.A. scene, Eagles, and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Linda Ronstadt, you know, like those are no less great because they fail to paint a rosy picture of love.
Well, it's interesting that you say a lot of them are African-American songwriters because the Great American Songbook is a lot of white men appropriating African-American music and making
it... Or trying. Right.
And making it, quote-unquote, palatable for the white masses, right? I mean, I read a book that basically was like, the fact that Irving Berlin wrote Alexander's Ragtime Band and that popularized ragtime. Ragtime was all African Americans. And so that's an interesting way to look at the Great American Songbook, the idea that we see these people as, you know, founding the sound
it seems
of our
a little
country.
White, yeah.
Yeah, but they were appropriating.
I mean, as someone who believes he's very sensitive to these issues and cares deeply about what other people feel and wants to listen, I don't agree. I feel like part of the thing about being American is that we have the capacity and the tendency to mix.
God, I don't know. It's all context, because who wrote a lot of songs that Al Jolson sung?
A lot of Jews.
Right.
I think Elvis Presley appropriated.
Uh-huh.
Shamelessly.
When I think of, like, that a lot of these songs were popularized by white men in blackface.
Yeah. Nothing yet.
That's appropriation.
Yeah.
But you ain't heard nothing yet.
Well, I think I know the difference.
Sure.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe who am I to say? But I think I know the difference between borrowing from or incorporating and appropriating.
Well, do you think
Harold Arlen appropriated black music or just was a master composer who, as an American, was soaking up sounds from all over the world, European modes, African-American modes, etc.?
I done lost my ugly spell. I am cheerful now. Got the warm all over the smooth and
these are very sensitive topics.
They're
that
very,
I feel
very sensitive. No.
Very, very scared about addressing in an open manner because I don't want to go.
No,
off
and
my,
it's so tricky and
lane.
Like it's honestly like a lot of tricky stuff, it's so case by case contextual. I read a book that basically accused Irving Berlin of appropriation, that like he never gave credit where credit was due, whereas Gershwin wrote Porgy and Bess and acknowledged, no, this is where the music that I'm writing comes from.
Right, but did you see Shuffle Along on Broadway? I mean, basically the whole thesis of the show is that he stole I Got Rhythm from a warm-up exercise from a black horn player in the pit.
Wow, I did not see Shuffle Along. Yeah. That's so interesting.
I mean, there's a lot of people who say this was bald-faced appropriation. It's not okay.
I didn't know that about Shuffle Along. I had not seen Shuffle Along. That's really interesting.
Yes. Well, it's interesting, and a lot of people are pissed off about it. Listen, my beautiful friend Rachel Bloom.
Oh, yeah. We have one more song, right?
So, a song from South Park.
Yeah, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut is one of the reasons that I write musical comedy.
That having been said,
This is a song from South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, which was the South Park musical. Stephen Sondheim called it the best musical he'd seen in 10 years. And this is a song where, let's just say, a teacher is showing his students how to be classy.
Ladies and gentlemen, It's Easy, okay, from South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, courtesy of my guest today, Rachel Bloom. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
There are times when you get suckered in by drugs and alcohol and sex with women, okay? But it's when you do these things too much that you've become an addict and must get back in touch. You can do it, it's all up to you, okay? With a little plan, you can change your life today. You don't have to spend your life addicted to smack, homeless on the streets, giving handjobs for crack. Follow my plan and very soon you will say, it's easy, okay? Step one, instead of ass, say buns, like kiss my buns or you're a buns hole. Step two, instead of say poo, as in bull poo poo, head in this poo is cold. Step three, with bits, drop the tea, cause Bic is Latin for generosity. Step four, don't say f*** anymore, cause f*** is the worst word that you can say, so just use the word okay.
We can do it, it's all up to us,
okay.
With a little plan, we can change our lives today.
You can change it today. You don't have to spend your life sitting up in the trash. Homeless on the streets, giving handjobs for cash. Follow this plan and very soon you will say, it's easy, I'm good. Step one.
It's Easy, okay, from South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. Trust me, it's destined to be a classic. The Naked American Songbook is a production of the Jonathan Channel, WNYC Studios, and WQXR in New York City. Our Naked American team includes my Crazy Ex-producer, Aaron Dalton, my Crazy Ex-assistant producer, Ellie Smirling, my Crazy Ex-production assistant, Hilary Bonhomme, and my Crazy Ex-executive producer, Mike Shobe. Our theme music is written by me. I'm my Crazy Ex-self, Julian Fleischer. Please like us, love us, leave lovely comments, and share, like. And finally, keep calm and get naked.
I'm actually thinking that it's Cheez-Its, and now my body likes it.
You just tell your body anything is Cheez-Its, and it can like it. Next time you're being beaten up on the subway, like, it's Cheez-Its.
And that's the only way I can go down on anyone. It's Cheez-Its. It's Cheez-Its. Let's pretend it's Cheez-Its.
I was trying to be polite, but I can see I can dispense with the formalities.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of ringtones being made during the early part of this interview. So we're not going to listen because we're going to go.
We just gabbed for hours.
We did.
I also was chugging ketamine the whole time.
It smells like
I'm really happy.